on that note, then, I think it's an appropriate moment to introduce Henry Hubert, who's going to be talking to us this afternoon about English, writing in the field of English, and also about the field of English more generally. Maybe I can start you off by asking you to tell us how you got involved in the first place as a student of English yourself. Was that where you thought you were going to be ending up teaching English at a university?
If I go right back to my first year, I got into English because I found it more interesting than the sciences. Strangely enough, in high school, I did better in the sciences, but in English, I found more questions. And actually, when I started my first year, I thought I'd go into psychology. But English asks such interesting questions that I just decided to go into English.
Big difference between high school and university for you?
Big difference.
In high school, I had no difficulty. Everything was easy, very little work, in fact. When I got into the first year of college, my marks dropped. And I started asking myself, how can I do better? What's going on here? How can I improve my writing, especially?
Was that a similar kind of experience for many of you as well? That a big change between high school and university in terms of expectations when it comes to writing? Any particular examples come to mind?
Well, I had the same thing happen to me as Henry. I coasted all the way through high school and got to university and found that there's a whole different type of expectation of what kind of writing I would do.
Well, one of the things that my own students tell me is that you come to a university, you come to a college, and people talk like books, that it's a different way of communicating, even oral communicating. Was that true for you as well?
Yeah. It took me a couple of years to understand certain words that I really didn't know what the teacher was talking about, and I was getting lost. So.
Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know if you've had this as well, Henry, that sometimes after first year, when students leave the college, go home to another community if they happen to be commuting as students, and they return back and some of their friends will ask them why they're talking like that, what kind of language are you using, who are you trying to fool, who are you trying to impress. Rory, you think so too?
Oh yeah, I've had that experience, very much so. I'm from Kamloops, but even just talking to people that you haven't seen for a while or that haven't gone to college, things like that.
Okay, well, if we're becoming involved in a dialect here, when we're as university students, what's the dialect then of English studies? What can you tell us that would help us write, say, a better English paper? If I'm a C student coming in to your class in English 110, English 111, what do I need to know that's going to make me a better student?
If you're talking about dialect, I don't know if I would use the term dialect as much as precision in language. Going back again to my first year, I remember in papers I would write certain words, and they would be circled, and I would go to the dictionary and find that I hadn't been using those words as appropriately as I might have. Weren't exact words, they weren't precise, and I think that reflects a sharpening of thinking as well. But I think a major difference in the language is the precision of language. And does that reflect perhaps what you were thinking, that you were using language more precisely, or?
I think so.
Is it precision or is it a jargon that one picks up? Is it really precision, you think?
In specific fields, of course, we learn to use the jargon or the terms of those specific discourses. For instance, if we're talking about literature, we learn to use more and more precisely words like what we mean by setting and character and theme, point of view. Those are specific terms that we use in literature, and we learn to use them accurately.
So the the disciplinary terminology then gives us categories for organizing our thoughts in perhaps a way that might sound like jargon to somebody outside the field, but when you're within it, it's a shorthand?
Sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about precision, did you mean just a more careful choice of language?
That as well. You see, we do learn those terms in every field. I think we learn specific terms. But in general, I think we learn to use language more carefully, certainly, both.
One of the things that we've been talking about in English 303, and I think it's relevant here, is that we never write outside of a context. We always write for a particular audience. And if the audience in English studies is, say, different from the audience in sociology or psychology or history, what can you tell us about the English professor? What is the English professor looking for?
I think the English professor is looking for what we started talking about earlier. The English professor is looking for expertise in those categories that the English professor deals with.
Mm-hmm.
And so the technical terms of the language, of the discipline, of course we have to learn, and we have to learn to work within those parameters. Learning those show that you belong to that community, in a sense. And if you don't speak with those terms, it suggests that you haven't learned to be part of that community.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to use words like...
That community is not a seamless community, though, is it?
By no means.
There are different factions within all of these disciplines that we're talking about. When I say sociology, there is no one voice of the sociologist or one voice of English studies. Can you give us an idea of the tensions, perhaps, within the field of English, the rival factions or the different philosophical viewpoints within the field?
Well, an obvious tension within the field, I would say there might be three areas within the wider field of English. One of the fields of English, and the most traditional field, is, of course, the field of literature. Another field that is more traditional, but hasn't been as traditional in the 20th century, is the field of rhetoric. That is, how to write persuasively. So rhetoric, the more traditional, going way back to the Middle Ages and earlier, in the 20th century, late 19th century, and 20th century, English has been related very closely with the study of literature itself. In the field of English, very recently, however, the field of technical writing is becoming more and more popular. So those are three areas.
How does rhetoric differ from technical writing, then? They're both
writing oriented, and the study of rhetoric is the study of putting your idea across well in whatever field. And so rhetoric, in a sense, would span every discipline in one sense. Technical writing would involve writing for engineering reports, for instance. That would be one aspect, but more and more it's business writing as well, known as technical writing. So writing in the professions would be technical writing. Rhetoric would be communicating persuasively across the disciplines. And literature, of course, is the study of literature, which is expanding from what was traditionally English literature to world literature.
So you write differently, do you, in these various classes or these various sub-disciplines of English?
Distinctly different. Different. If you look at a technical report, for instance, the field of writing, the vocabulary, even the format of the paper, distinctly different. A report is not an essay.
Okay. So we're beginning to talk about questions of format now, questions of language, language choice, and difference. You've brought with you an example of what you consider to be good writing.
Yes, this would be for a first year paper, it would be very good writing.
Mm-hmm. This is an example from a literature class.
That's right, and you were say comparing literature and or English and sociology.
Mm-hmm.
In a sociology paper, a good sociology paper, I would, or a geography paper, for instance, I would look for tables, I would look for statistics and things like that. But if you look at a paper like this, you find that it's a straight essay. There's only text. There are no diagrams, there are no tables, there are no charts. It's virtually only text.
So that's your first clue, then, that you're reading a literature paper?
You can have text in other areas, but the fact that I don't have charts and things like that, yeah, suggests to me that that I might be looking at literature. History might be the same, of course.
So it's more text-oriented, less visually oriented.
Very much more text-oriented. And now the interesting thing is, if you look at the first paragraph, the visual dynamic, if we could use that word, comes in the use of images. You see, that images give us the visual aspect, but in words. James Joyce's Boarding House is a study of mirrors. So you see a mirror. That's mirror-like characters, and the self-revelation inherent in viewing one's own, even the word image is used. So when we're dealing with literature, the word image, for instance, would suggest to us very strongly that we're in the field of literature or in the arts in some way. Although the word image, of course, can be used in any discipline.
Now, you're putting this forward as an example of fine writing.
That's right.
Of first-class writing at the first-year level.
No question.
What does this do that, say, a C paper in first year wouldn't be doing?
Well, if we look at this, I'd like to look at the structure of this paper as an A structure, in a sense. If we look at James Joyce's Boarding House is a study of mirrors, mirror-like characters, and the self-revelation inherent in viewing one's own image, the rest of the paragraph then introduces some ideas that follow. Mrs. Mooney is discussed, and her prey is Bob Doran. If we look at the rest of the paper now, we find the first paragraph is about Mrs. Mooney. Very strong paragraph, tying back to the first paragraph. Second paragraph ties back to the first. It's, in a sense, introduced in the first,
mm-hmm.
going back to what we call the thesis, what the book is, what the essay is about. The second paragraph also ties back to the whole question of imagery. And if you look at the final paragraph, where water clarifies Polly's sight, it obscures Bob Doran's. Bob Doran is also mentioned in the first paragraph. So the structure of this all hangs together very tightly, and that's the mark of a good paper. A C paper very often has individual ideas, but they don't hang together and develop the thesis as well as this one does.
So you're looking for what used to be called unity of effect.
That's right. And the unity of effect, of course, if we looked at that, would also be present within every individual paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you have the topic sentence that relates to the thesis. In a sense, every paragraph is in itself a mini essay, right? Because the topic sentence then could be seen as the thesis of that paragraph.
Now, everything in this short paper that you brought with you refers to mirrors.
That's right.
So the focus is extremely narrow.
That's right.
Is that a good thing to do?
Very often it's a good thing to do, depending on the topic of the paper, of course. What is central, of course, is that it's going to be dealing with, the paper is going to deal necessarily with the topic stated. Now, a good topic in literature, an analytical topic, very often goes deep. And the narrower the topic that we have, necessarily, the deeper and more analytically it cuts into the topic that we're analyzing. Mm-hmm. And so from that perspective, you see the imagery of mirrors takes us right from beginning to end. We discuss the middle of the story, in a sense, the beginning, the middle, and the end. We discuss all the characters related to that one image. See, so in a sense, it takes us into the story, right into the center of the story.
Now, you said that does this make sense to everybody so far? It's relatively narrow, if I'm understanding correctly.
That's right.
Everything relates. If you're going to talk about mirrors in James Joyce's The Boarding House, then the entire essay is about every reference to mirrors you can find in that story.
That's
and
right.
The discussion of it. Now, if that's a first-class paper at the first-year level,
right.
What do you need to do to that topic or to that paper at, say, the third or the fourth-year level to make it a first-class term paper?
I suppose the difference between the first-class term paper and the first-class paper on a short story like this, first of all, is simply the length. Mm-hmm. A term paper is going to be longer than this necessarily.
Normally 10 to 15 pages.
Normally 10 to 15 pages. But many of the same principles hold. That is, that a good term paper has that unity of structure that we find here. But very often in a term paper, we start asking ourselves different questions. That is, in expanding a little bit, because we're dealing with much, much more material, normally a novel. Mm-hmm. And when we're discussing a novel, then we're discussing the criticism of that novel. So we're discussing the novel.
Okay. If I can stop you there, there's no reference to criticism in this paper.
That's right.
This is a personal reaction, a very informed personal reaction to the story.
A very close reading of the story itself, yes.
But now you're asking for criticism. You're
That's right.
In the third year. So what kind of criticism? What are we looking for?
When we're looking at a work of literature in the third and fourth year, we're asking, what have other people said about this story? Mm-hmm. And the interesting, the interesting thing about the study of literature, of course, is that good literature has ambiguities. It suggests different things to different people. In a sense, every reader brings her own background knowledge to any reading of the story. And very briefly, that's why people often say that a book is better than a film. Because when you read a book, you bring yourself to the story, and the images are your stories. You personalize the story. Whereas a film does everything for you.
So if everybody has a different view of the story, is it a recipe for chaos that we're looking at here? Or is it a recipe for debate anyway?
It's a recipe for debate. But the interesting thing is that as a community, we have a commonality of interests. And because we're talking about the community interests rather than very personal interests, we can talk about the story, and it's the same story. We have certain shared understandings, even though we have individual points of view. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Would personal opinion become part of this third and fourth year essay as well? Like, not necessarily the I form, but the our own personal background, would that
be
included as part of the criticisms, like other criticisms?
It's necessary because you're going to be reading the story, you're going to be bringing yourself to the story. You see, and so as you compare critic A, B, C, and D, you're going to resonate more with critic B, for instance, right? Your reading will resonate with that. And so you will find that interpretation closer to yours, but your interpretation might be distinctly different from A, B, C, or D.
Or is there no right interpretation of these stories then?
There is no single interpretation. And here I think it comes down to your original question, what makes a good term paper mm-hmm. at the third and fourth year level? And I would say when I'm reading a paper, I'm looking for a thesis, and then I'm asking, is this thesis significant? does it resonate with the community as such? Then is this thesis relevant to the text? And finally, after I've read the paper, am I, as a reader, convinced that this thesis is valid? Is it true for this text? Am I convinced? And I ask myself that continually. After I've read the paper, for the individual arguments, when you present a topic sentence, for instance, does the paragraph convince me that that position that you've taken is valid? So I'm not asking, is your research, in a sense, complete? Because it can't be. There are always other viewpoints. But I'm asking the central question, are you writing convincingly? Am I convinced that your thesis is valid, significant, and true?
Well, so far, what I'm hearing, I'm not sure if this is true for you as well, but what I'm hearing is that we've got the same paper that was being written in the first year, showing unity of effect, a clear thesis, well organized, but now you're inserting that personal response to the text, informed personal response to the text, in a kind of a dialogue.
That's right.
A critical dialogue.
Sure.
That you've discovered in the library, presumably.
Sure. Sure.
Is that it, then? Is that all you do to write an A paper?
To write an A paper, I start with that question, is it relevant to the community? But at the same, am I convinced? But to write an A paper, I demand technical writing ability. A paper that is full of errors, even though I'm convinced, I'm also irritated. And if I'm irritated, that paper is not going to get an A.
What irritates you?
What irritates me? Weak sentence structure, run-on sentences, spelling errors, things like this. That is, I'll compare a paper to, if I might, to a car. That car might run very well, but if it's rusty, if it's not even washed, if the interior is dirty, if there are holes in the dashboard, the car might run very well, take me from here to Vancouver and back on a single tank of gas, but that car isn't going to get top price on the market.
You're describing your own car, aren't you? Just in case you didn't know. We've only got a couple of minutes left, and maybe this is a good point to turn it back over to you. And ask for any clarification about some of the matters that have been brought up thus far. And maybe I can start things off by asking, does this resonate, to use a word we've been using, with your own experience? Have you been asked to use the library more in third and fourth year, for example, than in first year, when you're writing, especially English papers, but maybe any of the subjects? And if so, what are the challenges involved in using the library to contextualize your views?
Have any of you ever had difficulty using quotes really smoothly in a paper? And how does that relate to this?
Well, I found that sometimes I feel like I'm using too much quotes to say what I want to say instead of saying it myself, or I don't use clarify what I mean.
Yeah, or else you use the quote and then you don't expand enough on it, and the teacher's like, well, what are you doing with this quote? You're not saying what you want to say. So.
Yeah, that strikes me as a really important aspect of this, is not only quoting, because as you're moving from first year to third and fourth year, obviously that seems to be an important aspect of it, to contextualize your own ideas, but you quote and then you comment on those quotes, so you contextualize the quotes within your own essay, and by doing that you're showing that it's not a disembodied voice, but you're using the information and working it in some way. How do you know when you've got a good issue to work with? And Henry's been using the term thesis. How do you know when it's a good thesis?
You make it matter. many pages as you need.
So when it generates a big enough essay.
That's right.
Let's give you the last word, Henry. How do you know when you've got a good thesis, a good topic to work with? How do you recognize one in a student paper?
Again, it depends. There's a difference between the first year and the fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the first year thesis, I'm expecting the thesis to take me into the center of the story in a sense, the way this paper does,
mm-hmm.
and it's a good thesis for the first year. At the fourth year, I'm looking for a thesis that in some way touches the various points that I found in the discourse in my research, that draws to search. A good thesis doesn't isolate the rest of the sources that I'm looking at. It in and draws it in a way that deals with the text that I'm dealing with. So it's simply an inclusion of the discourse community, in this case of literature, with the text. And when it does that, I know that I've got a significant thesis.
Thank you, Henry Hubert, from the English department. Thank you all, and good afternoon.